Sweat Equity Podcast.
What was that singing thing you just did?
Whatever I want, bitch. Woo! That's right. That's okay. Right. Ric Flair. What's up? We're the number one comedy business podcast in the world. You know why?
Yeah.
We're backed up by a couple awards we're going to humble brag about. Acquisition International just hit us up with the best business excellent award of business and comedy podcast of the year.
That might be our best one.
2024. It's only,
I know,
3 months into the season.
But that's the only one that says business and comedy podcast of the year.
I feel like they made that category for us.
I think they might have.
We made the genre, baby. Yeah. Hey, we've been around like 7 years, eight years, you know?
Yeah.
And then we just hot off the wire today from Corporate Livewire Innovation and Excellence Awards.
Everybody knows it. Everybody reads it.
We already won 2024 for SME Advice Podcast of the Year. What's SME? I think medium enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yes.
Whatever you want.
No, that is it.
Hey, we're crushing the game. We're crushing it out here. And if you like this podcast, share it with your friend, and or go on YouTube, subscribe, hit that little bell button. Get notifications when new episodes come in. And this episode sponsored by Zupyak, Zupyak, the first search optimized AI writer. Zupyak just launched the first AI writer on the market where search data is integrated into the AI writer workflow. No knowledge needed about SEO to create content that will have better search impact in seconds, not hours.
You should get an AI to read that for you.
I can't read out loud. Zupyak.com, Zupyak.com, promo code SWEAT. Let's get this party started.
It's called SWEAT.
We got it.
Listening to the Sweat Equity Podcast.
Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Sounds good. Okay. All right. We just get right into it.
Here, I'm ready.
So we want to start our episodes a little different. We have a little creative different opening now. We want to do a little lightning round kind of questions to earn your plugs, to earn your bio, your intro.
Or for us to mention your name.
So these will be like one word or one sentence answers. Nothing crazy. We're not going to ask physics questions.
You're the first guest that's getting this opportunity, by the way. So
selective word opportunity.
Yes, very selective.
You almost said the E word, the evil E word, exposure.
Right. I don't say that word. I don't say that.
That's only in entertainment. We'll pay you in exposure to our audience. You're like, that means zero money and no exposure. All right. First question is, did you listen to the podcast before coming on?
I listened to the one with the old dude.
Got to be more specific.
Yeah, we got a lot of old white guys on here.
408.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very specific.
Nice. Well done.
Now that you say that, like, we have no idea who it was off the top of our heads at all.
This is 448 episode?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was 408 that I listened to.
Okay.
Yeah, but this one with you, you got 448 is what I'm saying. I don't have a catalog memory like that. You got your next question?
What age did you have your first French kiss?
14.
Okay. Man,
diligent answer.
Very normal answer.
Here's a yes, no for you. Is there a God?
Yes.
Okay. Good.
You got another one?
No. What? I didn't know I had to do two.
I'll give it.
See, this is our first time.
I got one more.
Keep up coming.
Biggie or Tupac?
See, I don't like that one.
I'm a metalhead. I don't know anything about rap.
See, that's what
words, lady from Ozark. I don't know shit about fuck when it comes to rap.
Okay. See, that's what I was saying. I didn't like the question to begin with. That's not on you.
It tells us about him. That's the idea. Ding dong.
I know.
He's not into rap.
You asked that to
into
me.
Metal.
And I'd be like, I can't pick. I mean, they're different.
And then we ask everybody that comes on for the first time this question, you can take your time with this. This is your, like, if we're doing a 3-point shoot around, this is your money ball shot.
But lightning round is over.
Yeah. We need some music. We need some production. What advice would you give your 13-year-old self?
Make better choices. my high school years were beer, fighting, and girls. and that order changed depending on the day of the week. And I would say make better choices. My options after high school were the Marine, which I took, or a factory, which I didn't. So yeah, that would definitely be my advice to my younger self.
I want
to
unpack that, but hold let's on. Make sure we
write this
points.
Down real quick. YouTube channel, Beer Fighting Girls.
Okay.
Just that's it.
I want to make sure we get your plugs at the top of the episode. Where can people find you? You know, links, social, any of that?
Yeah, I'm easy. I've got a YouTube channel under my name, Jerry Ghidorie. I'm all over LinkedIn, which you amusingly made fun of in that episode, which I'd love to talk about. I also yes. have a couple websites. DestinationEmployer.co and Redbeard Solutions, my consulting company.
And you got a book, right?
Yep. Bestseller, Destination Employer.
Destination Employer, attract, recruit, and retain the top talent in your market.
Good looking yep. cover. Covers Thanks. Aren't easy.
Yeah, nice setup. Just subtle right in the side.
Yeah, I'm a very subtle person. That should be very clear by now.
hey, I'm subtle.
Well, I wanted to hear the background, your kind of story, and how you got to where you are now. But now you distracted us with the LinkedIn, because we don't know what we talk about on here as soon as we leave.
Yeah, memory erase.
So it's
probably
like,
for the best. It'll save you on therapy bills. you know, for sure. Yeah, no, you made the comment on LinkedIn being just all positive, feed, saccharine, sweet stuff.
Mm.
Dude, hard disagree. LinkedIn has devolved into this all employers suck and all employees are wrong place. This dichotomy, it's almost like a preview for November.
Well, yeah, it is. Your feed is different than ours, you know, in that direction because of the sector you're in. But yeah, I would say there's never been a time where the voice of people going, hey, recruiting and hiring practices are really like obsolete at this point. And like, man, I follow a couple people on X or whatever that are like high profile people. And they're like, I did 4 interviews with this Fortune 100 company and they didn't tell me until a month later that I didn't get the job.
Yeah.
After the 4th interview that were all one day long each.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
working interview probably.
I get the high level part of it, right? That, you know, might be a little bit more stringent, but to me that shows me the employer doesn't know what they're doing in the process. And so it's a lot of wasted time and time is 100%. Money. We'll put a pin in that for a second. Beer fighting. You said beer fighting?
Beer no. fighting girls. I mushed them all together. I had a funny visual. I had a funny visual of you taking beers and fighting girls with them.
Or being
but
so
I understand
drunk.
There were commas. Beer comma, fighting comma, girls comma.
Or being so drunk you're fighting an inflatable like PBR can at supermarket sweep.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, fuck, I'm going to fuck you up, you know.
My dad was old school. If I ever hit a girl, he wouldn't have shot. There wouldn't have been any
That's good.
Taking the background and talk. You'd have left my body cooling in a shallow grave. Mm.
Yeah. I'm not down with Jim Morrison or Chris Brown because they love to hit. They love hitting women. Like, they love it.
You know, everybody loves him, but the lead singer of the Beatles was the same way.
Mm.
John Lennon was a big girl smacker, and I've never understood. People make him a hero, but he was open about it.
Not a fan of him either. Either. Yoko Ono is the worst celebrity of all time. She is, like, the least talent.
Pre-reality TV.
No,
fair enough.
Have you seen her yell? Like, yodel, yell,
I've
scream?
I've heard plenty of Yoko Ono. I don't need to hear her ever again.
Like, the most famous Japanese person in America?
What?
Yeah. Think about it. What, Steve Aoki?
Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, well.
Ah!
Yeah. I bet her name's more recognizable. Where'd you grow up?
Dudley, Massachusetts, a place with all the diversity of a salt shaker.
Well, congratulations on the accent.
Yeah.
Well, couldn't tell.
I've been all over the place. Really, to be honest, Massachusetts is a weird place. Everything right of 495, which is the eastern third of the state, is the People's Republic of Massachusetts.
Everything
west of that is much more country.
I
grew up on 500 acres of pine. The road I grew up on wasn't even paved until I was in high school. It's just, it's different out in the western part of the state.
A word I have trouble saying, rural. Kind of upbringing, you know,
You nailed it.
I've been working on my diction. Is that in Massachusetts? Did you hop around? It sounded like you had a military, maybe hop around kind of family background.
No. I grew up in Massachusetts. First time I ever got an airplane was to go to boot camp in South Carolina, Pearl Island. God. And then from there, obviously, in the Marines, I bounced around. Then when I got out of the Marines, I bounced around a bit. And then my mom was doing poorly, so I wound up moving back up here.
Okay. Yeah. Because, like, you could tell me you're in Arkansas, and I would buy it. You know, you just... You got that kind of hearty vibe to you.
But dude, I'll tell you, I was married for 20 years and my wife, 15 minutes in any place, and she had that accent. Like she'd been born. That was crazy.
Oh, like when your friend
chameleon.
Goes, yeah, your friend goes to the UK for like a week and comes back talking like Madonna.
Right. When is tea time?
I lived in Scotland for 3 years, and after 2 weeks of her being there, I was like, pretty sure you want to tone that accent down.
Now, when you divorced her, did you have to divorce every accent personality? Is it like
you've been divorced?
Well, mazel tov on the divorce. We always say that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Now you're kind of a serial entrepreneur. It's from your bio. How do we get from South Carolina to present time?
I already answered that question.
Weren't you paying attention?
Well, philosophically, yes. But yeah, I mean, we got time to kind of chew the cud a bit.
For sure. So it's kind of interesting. So I didn't take school very seriously at all. As a matter of fact, I only did well my senior year of high school. And my dad actually got angry at me. He goes, you know, I always thought you were stupid, so I never pushed you on this, but clearly you're not. So I wound up taking the ASVAB, scored in the top couple percent in the country, did signals intelligence to the Marines, and that was my exposure to technology. So I got my TSSCI clearance there, learned a little bit about Unix administration, about signals intelligence, radio wave propagation, all that. Super nerdy stuff. When I got out of the Marines, had a wife and two kids to feed. So I just took the first job I could get. Fast forward several years, I got the opportunity to get back into technology, and kind of a weird tangent story. This is before I even knew what a staffing agency was, or this is before Monster existed. I mean, old story. I went to an interview to be a junior Linux kernel engineer at what wound up being a staffing firm. The lady who was supposed to interview me called in sick. Manager felt bad that I drove all the way out there. She interviewed me 15 minutes in the interview. She said, you don't have the experience for the job, but have you ever considered becoming a technical recruiter? I had no interest whatsoever, exactly zero. But I figured that close to the jobs, I just get myself a tech job. Fast forward 25 years, I'm talking to a dude in a pink do-rag, and here we are.
Wow, this is my dry fit, just in case I sweat. I don't want to.
Dude, your burps right now are so gnarly. He's burping over here, and it's like you ate garbage for lunch.
Oof. Oh, you know?
I had to say something.
Garbage juice? You didn't need to know. The listeners didn't need
yes,
to know
they
that
did.
Shit.
I can't be the one to take this on by myself.
I'm going on your soy boy fruity diet, keto style. Just going carnivore.
I like how you try to flip around your disgusting breath on me.
I'm having nasty, nasty stuff.
I know.
I'm brewing some butt coffee down there.
Good.
So back to our guest. So are you got in the recruiting side for tech, or you got into like cybersecurity side, or both? Kind of, how did that work out?
So the firm that I wound up working for was a technology recruiting firm, but it was a generalist firm. So we did everything from desktop support to app dev, and you know, everything in between. I pretty rapidly realized that I enjoyed the sales and leadership side more than the recruiting side. So after about a year and a half, 2 years in, I transitioned to sales, and that's where I found my stride. I jammed there. Did really, really well. Became a manager, became a regional manager. I wound up moving to Kelly Services. I ran the whole New England market for them. So it's a $6 billion piece of business, the New England tech market. From there, I went to work for a friend of mine's management consulting and sales training company, Manemption Group, as our principal consultant. So I did sales training, I did recruiter training, I did leadership coaching, and then rapidly realized I just assumed be on my own. He moved to more he and I created an LMS, and he was really more focused on selling to that. And it was good for him, but boring for me. So I started my first company, Influence Understood, where I did, again, sales training, recruiter training. But I really quickly transitioned to the leadership side. So I was doing, it started with just management coaching, but again, that rapidly evolved to me taking long-term contracts in companies as a senior executive. So I was the president of Apicero. We went from two dudes to 2,500 people, nine offices in three countries in 5 years, nine-figure acquisition. I took on the role of COO at Prominent, which was a software development house. Long story short, if I were capable of that, I got tired of making other people rich. So I started Redbeard Consulting to do myself that favor. And that was really when I migrated hardcore into the cyber.
I mean, I'm getting a man crush. I don't know about you, but you got some moxie on you.
I can't think straight with this breath of yours.
I'll put some nicotine gum in a second. But
thanks.
But you are kind of a one of those rare in the tech. I work for a IT marketing agency. They basically had a lot of IT localized clients, and then also had some enterprise corporate as well kind of thing. And I know from that experience, you are kind of that rare unicorn-y kind of rock star there, like someone that's in the tech field that has done some of that work, but can sell.
I was going to say the sales part is where you could be a successful CEO.
You're the queen piece on the chessboard.
Yeah,
you're
the face of the company.
You know, that's really rare to come by. And then you just kind of took that and kind of pushed it forward, I guess. You had that inertia to do it. Talk to us about, so my one of my favorite stats ever in business is a bad hire is negative 298% ROI.
I feel like you change the number every time.
It's been the number. It's a weird stat I have in my head for years. It's probably changed by now. But the moral of the story is it's bad when you're not good at hiring and you hire the wrong person. Talk to us about kind of the landscape nowadays, how, you know, that fervor on LinkedIn you're seeing, you know, now people are having a voice to talk about this whole process. I don't think we're very good as a whole in just the US on how we hire people. We're big proponents of predictive index or culture index or Asher strategies tests that can help kind of make sure your personality fits. Shouldn't be way too much, but it can kind of go, okay, this person's probably more sales. You know, let's get them slid over that way, have a track. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to speak of this as a whole for the sake of, you know, having a conversation, but from the sake of problem solving, you can't do it this way. So I'm going to give you the simple answer first, but whenever you're trying to solve a problem, you're going to break it down to the smallest possible components so that it's a solvable thing. But the real issue is that the relationship between employee and employer has changed. When our dads were working, if you were in a job for less than a decade, you were a job hop. When I came on the scene in the late 90s, early 2000s, if you were on a job for less than 5 to 7 years, you were a job hop. Fast forward just a couple of years, if you had more than two jobs in 7 years, you were a job hopper. A couple more years, it was five. Now for tech folks, they're averaging 18 to 24 months in a job. The relationship isn't the same anymore. So what's happening now is that as people are seeing more of the world and as social media gives them a platform to speak from, they're speaking to problems that many of them were already there. So really the focus needs to shift rather than I'm hiring Eric and Law to be my whatever your roles are going to be in my company. I'm developing a relationship with these two guys and we're going to work together whenever opportunity and need align. You might work for me for the next year on a project, find something better and go away and come back in 6 months. After that, we may never work together again. But if my mentality is I'm developing a long-term relationship with these guys, everything shifts. Everything transitions in how we interact. And it becomes more about aligning our goal. And the more that we can align our goals, the more likely we all get a positive outcome. And again, not to totally steal the microphone, but this phenomenon of quiet quitting, this is the inverse of what I just described. If you go out on your floor and it's nothing but crickets and people are clock watching till five, the problem is you. Mm-hmm. You are the reason that is what it is. You've done nothing to inspire these folks. You've given them nothing to reach for. They're just there for their allotted time to get the money to go do what they do on their own. Yeah. So I don't know if that answers your question.
No. I'm just taking it all in. No, I 100% agree with everything you're talking about. Yeah, there's no gold watch anymore. There's no retirement after 30 years kind of thing. Yeah. Like my dad worked at the same place for 35 years. That his boomer generation, that'll pretty much be the last of that, unless, you know, you really just don't, you want to be a 9-to-5er lifer kind of person.
No, that's a cool way to do it. I mean, kind of looking at it like it's relationship building, because then you can
shift
expectations. You kind of build like a stable of people that you can draw from and just have your company be that much better with all these different resources now, just because you don't think of it as just a job to fill or whatever, thinking of it as a person and all that.
You know, I'll pick on Apicero. That's the company I was president of that we grew to 5 years and got acquired by NTT Data. So when I joined them, when we first started out, we were, they still are, a MuleSoft consulting company. MuleSoft is an API tool that sits inside of the Salesforce ecosystem. And at the time, MuleSoft had just been acquired by Salesforce, and they were the white hot tech that everybody loved. Getting MuleSoft jobs wasn't super hard to do. Getting people to do them what? So we had to build our company around being able to consistently attract, recruit, and retain anybody who could even spell MuleSoft, because we had more work than we had people. And the way that we did that was largely what I described a minute ago. If I was interviewing one of you guys to come and join the company, I'd be asking you, what's your next career step? What projects are you looking for? What are you trying to accomplish in the next 5 years? Making sure that it aligns with what I need. If it doesn't align, there's no reason to waste any more of your time. It's not a win. But if it does, we're going to keep going. What are you looking to achieve as it relates to integration architecture and MuleSoft? And as long as this aligns, not only am I learning about you and creating a natural environment for you to be open about what you're trying to achieve, but I'm also building your career plan so that if we do move forward, we transition to onboarding you and creating your employee review structure, all that business, I know what you want to do. I'm building that into your employee reviews. When I'm talking to you about your projects, I'm not saying I need you to do X, Y, Y. I'm saying, hey, Eric, in order to achieve that architect level you talked about, we need to get this done. Where are we at? And surprising nobody, because Eric cares about Eric, he's a lot more in tune than if I'm saying you have to do X, Y, Y, or I'm going to be angry.
Mm. Yeah. God, yes. All that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I love the openness that you can just be, you know, hey, listen, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, what my plan is. I'm free for a year. And like, it's just such a breath of fresh air, the direction things need to go, or the quiet quitting stuff, just like,
It's counter
secretive. And you think you're always on the lookout, watching your back. It's just like,
it's counter.
That's not how you get productive work done.
It's counterintuitive to how everybody kind of thinks too. Let's do this Quentin Tarantino movie style. Let's do the end at the beginning. Well, I want to know the exit on the entry 100%. So I know where you're at. Yeah, I've always talked about like Chick-fil-A. The reason they can get, you know, $12 an hour workers to never say you're welcome and say my pleasure, because you can't get them to do it. It's like Buckingham Palace. You can't break them. Is because they've created a professional track for them, right?
Yes.
Here's a very systematic laid out route. You may own one of these in 15 years if you do everything on this track, right? It's laid out right when the entry point, the lowest low employee. You're saying, like, in a way of like interviewing for people, I want to know your track for your career personal, because I want to know where your mindset's at. And I bet you arrived at this out of frustration of hiring techniques, and it's almost more economic to do it this way. Is that right?
There's no almost. And the other part of it too is you mentioned that retention stat early on, that 298X thing. If I hire you and you have the technical skills and chops to do the job, but you have no opportunity to grow in my role, why are you going to stay?
Right.
Right.
There's no reason. The leadership framework that I espouse in my book, in my programs, my consulting company and all that stuff, I call it the EFG leadership framework: engage, fulfill, and grow. If I look at you, Law, and I talk to you, I engage with you, I ensure you feel heard and valued on my team. You're fulfilled in your job. It's achieving your personal goals. You're happy. Ideally, you're happy with the mission of my company. And you're growing in your role, and you have growth, a career path beyond that in my company. You're never going to go. There's not a reason for you. But as soon as one of those things breaks, that's not the case anymore. And it might well be growth. You might be killing it. We might be getting along great. But the next logical step in your career in the timeline you need it isn't with. So if at that point you leave, you're no traitor. You didn't kidnap my kid and run away. The next step in your career isn't with me. So I make that easy I make it a graceful transition. And while you're out there, now I've got an ally in the marketplace. You might provide a testimonial for me. You might give me intro to that company. You might very well boomerang back when the next step comes. Everything is good. It's a natural ending to what could and should be positive. So when that happens, we do a good exit interview. I create an alumni group that you're a part of. And dude, everything is roses. But people take business in some ways so personally. Like I said,
it's emotional.
Not for a good reason. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of meat on this bone to go over. And, you know, we try to keep this to around 30 minutes. We'll have to get you back on. But it's like there is a weird emotion because I think it's really interesting. You're telling people to change their mindset for hiring, like hiring managers and executives. Here's your mindset. You need to not think of it as a we got to fill this position right now and then be done. Okay, moving on kind of thing. You really need to dedicate a little bit of thought to this.
Yeah.
To this human.
Yeah.
Which is odd, but you know, it's not, you're actually more efficient and profitable if you do take a little bit of that time to go, hey, I need to know what this person is about other than the actual skills they may have. You know, that kind of got them in the door. But if they, and there's externalities too, right? Like they can get hit by a bus. That's always my example, right? You can't help that. But people get really upset if you go somewhere, the culture's weird, and a lot of places I've been at might be successful. But as Michael Wilbon says, winning's a stinky cologne. You might be winning, the company might be crushing it on the income statement, but internally it's fucking a mess, and everyone's scared or lives in fear, you know?
You know, but dude, there's more to that too. So I've been doing this for more than 25 years. And in that time, I've seen far more bad matches than I have bad candidates and bad company. So to your point, that place might be great. It's not great for you.
Right.
That doesn't make you a bad guy. That doesn't make them bad guy. It makes it a bad marriage. So go away and go find a place you can thrive. I'll tell you, a lot of people think what I say is woo-woo. And then when I tell them the end piece, they lose that. And that's this. I give anybody I hire 100% of my support until one of three things happen. Number one, they show through their execution they can do it and they've earned autonomy and I bless them to go and do their thing. Number two, they've shown that they can't do it. You know, we made a mistake. There's a misalignment of skills or whatever. At that point, if they're a strong cultural match and there's another role, I for sure will push them to that new role because they're a good match for the team. They're just a bad match for the job. But if they won't do it or there's not another open role, we separate right there. Why? Because I'm wasting that person's time. They're never going to thrive. They're never going to be a rock star. And I'm wasting my resource. I'm paying somebody who's never going to make it. So we part ways. So again, 100% of my support till they either do it, show they can't, or show they won't. And then
last kind of question I've got for you. Why does everybody think there's a couple of things that people feel are innate? That they kind of just know because they're a human. I put taste in music in there. Uh-huh. I put sense of humor in that bucket.
I was gonna say, I'm funny.
People think they know marketing because they experience
recruiting.
It. Recruiting. The other one's management.
Yeah.
What you just spoke to about like, hey, and that, let's call it the first 90 days. I'm gonna have one of three outcomes, and that's I'm gonna make sure. But I'm going to follow up with you every day, which probably isn't that hard, honestly. You just have to be very diligent about those little follow-ups every day, you know, because you probably have a bunch of people, I'm guessing. But you have one of three scenarios that's going to happen at the end of this whatever period. I'm going to say 90 days, for example. But why don't people ever take management classes or ever think – why so much hubris around managing people? And because a lot of people will leave a job because of bad managers, not because they're a bad employee.
Of the time they leave for that.
I think it's because they're pigeonholed and they already have to be the manager. It doesn't
there's that too.
You know, they're here. Oh, I'm the manager. Like what? It doesn't matter. I'm not hiring another person to run my business. That's my thought.
That's definitely a big chunk of it too. You come in, you're basically, you know, if you want something done, give it to a busy person kind of logic, like, you know, and they'll just go, oh, well, this guy's number two. He wants to do three jobs. Perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, and then micromanage it. The worst is coming in and micromanaging and then going away and then coming back in randomly and doing it again. You're like, you don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
I talked about that in my book, Micromanagement, Absentee Management, and Active Management. But to answer your question, a quick example first. So my first recruiting management job, my branch manager called me into her office and said, would you like to be, we call them quad leads. You got four people on your team. I said, yeah, sure. And she goes, I thought you'd say that, and handed me a box of business cards, walked me out of her office, announced my new role, and gave me my quad. And that was my manager.
What? Whoa.
Yeah.
She was really confident in you.
And like,
yeah, and I was so bad at it initially that she would send people to my quad that she wanted to leave the company because she needed to quit.
Oh, shit.
That's a role in itself, you know.
I was horrible at it.
You're like the people that are in jail for, you had like the jailbirds that are there for a year or two waiting to get out or go to prison. Damn. Yeah, no, that's because that's part of retention to me, right? If you do invest time in the hiring process, and bringing them in and bringing talented people in, you made the right hire. Let's get over that part. Now, managing people is part of retention. It's just funny. It's always funny to me. No one ever goes, you know what? Maybe I should read a management book.
Right. Well, they pick and choose what they want to spend their money on. Like, there's management courses, but it's like, you know, you can't go halfway.
You hit on the head. Oh, sorry, Eric. Earlier law when he said people, it's like recruiting. People think they can do it because it's a soft skill, and soft skills don't require education. You just pick them up on the fly. But the difference between a highly performing team, a competent team, and a below average team is night and day. And the universal truth of the highly performing teams is they have highly performing leaders that know how to get that performance from them. Part of what builds that is the stability of retention. And we focused on that, and it's a good thing to focus on. It's easier to fill buckets than it is colanders, so it's a smart play to talk about. But let's take it the next step and say, how do we take those people and turn them into a highly performing team? And that's through a strong leader that knows how to align goals and speak to people and to put things through the lens of their own enlightened self-interest. The better and more effective they are at that, the more naturally that person becomes engaged in your outcome. If you know I care about your outcome, you care about mine. That's just basic reciprocity. But you're right. It's a skill. My book is How to Consistently Attract, Recruit, Retain Top Talent. But I spend more time talking about leadership than I do all of those things because it's what drives everything.
Right. Right. And you know, thank you for letting us have Tom Brady for 3 years. We're in
Thanks
Tampa.
Thanks for exposing his wife as a witch.
Hey, man. Hey, that's another successful divorce in my book.
Yep. He's in our club.
All right. We got to get you back on. I'm going to get your book and actually read it instead of some of the books I get. And just I'll get to that because I totally philosophically align with everything you've been saying. And it's one of those things that a couple episodes ago, we were talking about that car dealership speaker, the guy who teaches sales for dealerships. And he's total exposed as a fraud. I forget. He's like a roid head kind of looking dude, one of these like bro professional.
Tear the TV off the wall.
Yeah, tear the TV off the wall, put a whiteboard up.
Yeah.
You know, like your family's like, what the fuck? Can I draw on it? No, it's for business, for the family. One of those, you should be more famous than that guy. Like, what you're putting out there is actual pragmatic advice. It's not woo-woo.
It's sustainable.
Right, right. It's actually more economical and efficient than a lot of the other people I've heard talk about the subject. So we'll have to get you back on. And if you're ever in Florida, give us a holler. But appreciate you coming on. And we'll be in touch.
Sweet. Thanks, guys. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah.